Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus. Well, Mike Trudell, who's been a longtime Los Angeles Lakers sideline, or I don't know, call him a sideline reporter. Is it a sideline in basketball? I don't know. Yeah, it is. Okay. Sideline reporter is, he just came from the Kobe Memorial. He's going to tell us all who spoke, what they said, all who sung, and all the feelings about a guy who's traveled with Kobe and knows him very well and has a very interesting Kobe ping pong story coming up as well. Then the news, of course. First, there's Bet Online. It's almost March. College basketball's elite are fighting for the lower seeds. The elite's fighting for the upper seeds, and the lower seeds want to get in the tournament. NBA's in its home stretch as well. Visit our exclusive partner at Podcast One, Bet Online. Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account with the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. NBA, they got Nuggets at Clippers and Bucks at Raptors, Celtics at Trailblazers. And, well, we got the XFL. Let's not forget the LA Wildcats and New York Guardians, everybody, and DC Defenders, Tampa Bay Vipers. Lots of good XFL that you can wager on as well. Visit BetOnline. Don't forget, use the promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
ACS fans, get it on. We wanted to take a moment to tell you, if you haven't signed up for the Carolla newsletter yet, you're missing out. Every Saturday, you'll get exclusive video content you can't get anywhere else, behind-the-scenes stories, and a new giveaway each and every week. We've already given out an all-expense-paid trip to L.A. to watch the Super Bowl with Ace. And this week,
a copy of Adam's newest doc, Shelby Americans, signed by the Ace Man himself.
Enter for your chance to win at CarollaNewsletter.com today.
Mike Trudell is here. He's at the official Lakers podcast and also is a Lakers sideline reporter for many years. Knows Kobe very well and just left the memorial. So nobody better to fill us in on that experience. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. And on a totally different note, I was just thinking back to 1995 when I was in eighth grade and Loveline came on in Minnesota every night at midnight. So you taught me a lot about things that I didn't know much about, told many jokes as well. So I appreciate that. You and Dr. Drew educating me and my friends when we were in eighth grade.
Yeah, that show was penetrated a lot of places and cities and got to a lot of young people in some sort of bygone era where people would stay up and sneak the radio under the covers and listen.
There was nothing else on. You had your TV stations, but at that point we all had to be in our rooms because it was on at midnight and you're supposed to be sleeping. And you turn on the radio and it was like the only show where it was something aside from music.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was a great resource. Now you have a million podcasts such as this one. You can kind of pick what you want to learn about, but at the time I literally remember it was just Loveline.
Loveline was the last of that.
Yeah, and then my pitch to program directors was always, I'm number one as long as there's nothing else on. Now if you got choices then we got an issue.
Yeah.
But if you don't have
choices, we're in safe harbor.
That's right. I'm like I'm the number one cafeteria food at the school. As long as there's no In-N-Out burger, then I'm still number
one. Kids are flocking.
So, Mike, you just got back from the memorial. Tell us your thoughts or recollections of it.
Yeah, it was just it was incredibly emotional, as anybody that just watched it could tell. But being in there, you didn't know. We weren't sure what was going to happen, other than that there were going to be a lot of tears. And so it starts with Beyonce, and then Jimmy Kimmel comes out, and just thinking about one of the most indelible moments after he died was that video that surfaced of Kobe talking about Gigi on Jimmy's show.
Right.
And so there was that immediate kind of connection, and he's somebody I think that America knows, that Los Angeles knows, that was perfect for this, that kind of made everybody feel comfortable, was able to elicit a laugh here and there, of course, which I think was much needed. And I thought everybody did a great job, spoke from the heart, and it was just, I don't know if I'll ever be there for something like that again. This is such a singular event, such a singular thing that hits in so many places as a child, as a parent, as a family member, as a fan, all parts of society really that have kind of rallied around this in this city. And it's so heartbreaking, but also there's a lot that we can take out of it, obviously, as well.
Hearing Vanessa speak about Gigi is like, oh my God.
That was tough.
That was, what she's never going to be able to do, what she did do. I mean, oh, man, she was so eloquent. And I'm amazed. As someone who does public speaking, I'm always amazed at how poised and how good sort of civilians mm-hmm. can be. You know, they write it out. It's eloquent. It's well thought out. It's from the heart. Not a lot of stammering and cotton mouth, like they seem amazing. She was like amazing in this situation that could just get the better of anybody.
She had a heap of tears. It'd be totally understandable.
Amazingly poised.
Yeah. So at the end, and I had to write it down to make sure I remembered it. She said, "Babe, you take care of our Gigi, and I got Nani, BB, and Coco. We're still the best team." It's shattering. And so when we were actually, as the team was flying back from Philadelphia, there was a game the night before, and when the news happened. And so all of us, or I guess one person first got that initial tweet from TMZ, and it started to spread around the plane. And it was just the thing that part of it was just surreal and unbelievable, and everybody's trying to confirm or deny as best they can.
So you guys are in the air.
In the air, yeah.
So there's an element of...
You can't
not
call anybody.
Quite the same as when you're on the ground, but you're hearing the worst news possible.
And of course, some of the people on the plane were very close to Kobe. And then, one of the gentlemen in the back who had done some security with his family, there was some hint or some worry that possibly one of the girls, could have been on based on kind of the route that they go back and forth. And so, and that's, as you mentioned, Adam, that's the part that's so truly devastating, is thinking about that image, right, of Kobe looking over at his daughter at a certain point that we all think about. So it's really devastating.
So who spoke at the event? We know Alicia Keys played, I think, right?
Beyonce? Yeah, she played. Christina Aguilera sang Ave Maria. And so Shaq spoke. And what was Gino Auriemma, Sabrina Ionescu, the future number one pick to be. And then Michael Jordan coming out was just something unexpected. There have just been so few times that we've seen him. The last time that he spoke really publicly was the Hall of Fame speech. And to have him share those heartfelt moments of his friendship with Kobe and the big brother, little brother relationship. And I don't know, he's just, for me, like growing up in the 80s, he was the guy for me. Michael Jordan will always be sort of that top level hero. And then he was the guy, too, that Kobe was desperate to surpass, or at least to be as great as he could. And I've never heard, first, I work in the NBA, I'm obsessed with this stuff, and Jordan has never shared this before, this connection, these text messages, the phone calls he would get at
3 a.m.,
it was incredible sitting there hearing that and looking around, and you could feel that in the room. Some of the greatest athletes in the entire world, some of the most, Beyonce, of course, started like that. Kanye West is there, all of the Jimmy Kimmel, all of these people that could go anywhere and be the most quote unquote famous person in the world are all thinking about Kobe in this different light. And then there's the one other person, Michael Jordan, summarizing it all. It's tough to match that.
Did, Gina.
Well, Shaq was kind of amazing in his own right. But I remember, it might have been Ionescu, I'm not sure. One of them took a shot at Shaq.
Taurasi had a little shot.
She was, I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be sort of good humored and lighthearted, or if there was some bad blood there. Maybe she just had too much of a poker face.
I think it was Taurasi had mentioned something as a joke about LeBron, like the fadeaway jump shot.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. It was LeBron. No,
yeah. But look, probably like anybody else watching, my brain was half fried with all the people coming up and you're crying here and there. And then you're looking at all the people next to you and the arena was full to a brim. And it just when she said that about LeBron, it was that same kind of feeling of all everybody. I don't know, the sense for me was that like there's a real uniformity around this. There's like a real, so many people knew him in their own different way, or at least from afar, that it touched everybody, and we're able to kind of all mourn this as a community, which doesn't happen that often.
What was the LeBron comment?
It was something like she was talking about Gigi and what an incredible player she was at this young age, and I could be getting this wrong, so please forgive me, but it was something like, you know, she's amazing at 3-point shots or something, and you know, LeBron hasn't even figured that out or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was like she had already mastered the fadeaway at her age, and I think like LeBron just did the other night. He just hit the fadeaway over Jaylen Brown last night to beat Boston. So she may have just been referencing that.
It got a laugh, but she didn't laugh, and I was like, oh, I don't know if there's something there we don't know about.
I think it's a joke, but that's good. And now we have a
it's the right time to expose beefs.
And oddly enough, because you know, a lot of Shaq's speech was about their sort of. Not beefs, but kind of explaining a lot of that away. Like, oh, no, we always laughed about it afterwards, and we're brothers. So it was really interesting.
We have the joke. You found the joke? All right, well, we'll hear it. We're looking at Scottie Pippen, I think.
Her skill was undeniable at an early age. I mean, who has a turn-away fadeaway jumper at 11? LeBron barely got it today.
Yeah, she's making a joke.
Yeah, I think so he hit a jumper last night against Boston, yesterday.
How long in total was the event?
So it started about 10:30 and went to 12:30, so just about 2 hours.
And so you knew Kobe pretty well with your job, sideline reporter, and spent time, traveled with the team, so on and so forth. I think there's one story Chris was telling me about you and he playing ping pong together or that Thanksgiving night. How did that story go?
Yeah, so I want to say it was around 2012 or 2013, and the team was in Detroit, and it was Thanksgiving, and of course everybody is missing their families. This is one of the things that happens during the NBA season, and so Kobe realized that nothing had been planned, so he essentially like rented out, you know, the second floor boardroom type thing in this hotel, and there was this massive Thanksgiving spread, and you know, he kind of took care of it. At that point, it was him and a bunch of young guys, so he was kind of like the older brother
on the team.
On the team. All the other players were young guys, and so Kobe at this thing. There's a bar there, and then there are a couple of like footballs, and then there's a ping pong table. So some of the players start going back and forth. I think I started playing Jordan Farmar at a certain point, and then I don't know if hardcore Laker fans might remember Sean Williams was around for a cup of tea, and I was playing against Sean Williams. Kobe was on the side, and I was beating Sean, and so Kobe was talking trash to Sean. Like, how are you going to lose to the MFing sideline reporter? Like, what are you doing? And so I in complete jest and anticipating nothing except for hopefully a hearty nod of approval, said something to Kobe along the lines of, do you want some too? and sure enough, he did. And so I wasn't sure what I had gotten myself into. And so he gets up and I play him, and pretty soon on, I realize that I'm just in this one thing. He's better at almost everything. One of the greatest athletes in the history of anything. I am a little bit better at ping pong. Okay, so I grew up with the table. So I know this right away the second that I see him hit. And so I beat him pretty handily the first game. And he's not talking trash to me, but he's actually adjusting within a ping pong game. So by the end of the game, I have to stop praying on his backhand because he's adjusted to that. Mm-hmm. Normal people don't do this. They sort of just get up and play and then they sit down.
Right.
So then he says, let's go again. Next game, it is harder to beat him 2 minutes later in the second game than it was in the first game. And it just, Rob Pelinka, actually, of course, his best friend, the general manager of the Lakers, he got up and told a story today about playing tennis with Kobe. They would go to the health club or whatever it was in Newport Beach, and he was playing with Kobe, and Rob was better at first. So a couple weeks later, he goes and plays Kobe again. He finds out Kobe has been getting private lessons from the pro at the club, and he's already started to make gains. And so I saw this for myself in this little 10-15 minute window of playing ping pong against him. And I think that was echoed in all of the tributes that you heard today, that this was how this guy was. He wanted to and had to be the best, or at least try his hardest. Like, he didn't care that he lost to me. That was one thing that was impressive. It wasn't an ego thing. He was just like, okay, well, I don't want this happening again. So his security guy later told me that he ordered a ping pong table, I think, like in one of the next couple of days. So it's just, it's my own little slice of it. It's embarrassing even to think about, like, yeah, I beat Kobe at ping pong. Who cares? It's just what you get out of it is a little window into how he ticked.
Well, you know, what's interesting, or kind of what I'm hearing in that, and it's also, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday about this, which is like, why aren't more people interested in improvement? Why aren't they interested in getting better? You know, I was talking to a guy and he's telling me about a couple of his brothers that, you know, all they do is smoke cigarettes and drink energy drinks. And they're like, and it's like when you try to coach them up, they get angry and agitated and stuff.
It's a comment. It's a referendum of who they are as a person.
Right. But why are there so many people that just – and so Kobe wanted to improve. And if he was playing ping pong, he wanted to improve playing ping pong. Because it turns into a global thing. It's just a mindset. Like, it could be a language. It could be an instrument. It could be making a short-form documentaries. Could be making children's programming. He was in the business of improving.
Yes.
And basketball ended up being how he got paid. But he was always in the business of just getting better. And so you watched him get better in 6 minutes playing ping pong with you because he was adjusting and making improvements. And other people get angry at the table, or they get angry at the ball, or they get angry at you, or the paddle has it in for them, or the net hates them, or whatever it is. And I think what we admire about him is that he was constantly doing that. How could I shave a few tenths off my next lap around this race course? And I don't know why that is not a little more prevalent. There's more people who are on the sad side of that.
So hearing you describe that, though, I would imagine, like, to build what you've built, you had to have a certain level of, you know, aside from the talent, this curiosity or this wanting to be great at something, to keep pushing it, to keep doing it all these years and continue. Like, I was driving in listening to one of the previous shows. I guess I'm probably, that sounded like I was kissing your ass. But one of the previous shows, you were talking about the difference between, like, a turbo engine and a supercharged engine. And I'm not a car guy. And the level that you described to that was like listening to LeBron talk about pick and roll. Like, it was really, there was passion, like, oozing out of that. So that is that quality that Kobe had, it seems like, in everything.
I don't know why such a large percentage of the population is has taken a stance against improvement or information or knowing, but they have. And then I think that makes guys like Kobe stand out like that much more, because even though you think it would be like a little more ubiquitous, like people want greatness, people want to strive for greatness, people want to, you know, work and work past the pain and all this stuff. It's all a bunch of cliches until you have to go do it. Well, and then you don't. And then most people just, they want to have a sandwich and sit down.
I wonder if people, though, are also threatened by the people that are pushing to be that good at something. I always felt like that. I grew up in Minnesota, and there was a little bit of that there. Like, what do you mean? Why do you want to be the best in your class at this sport or have the best GPA? There's a little bit like, who do you think you are?
Well,
elements that people have.
Look, if you are sitting on the sidelines of life getting fat and somebody says, why don't you join the game? You don't go, because I'm angry and lazy. You go, because that guy's dad, that guy was born on third base and thought he hit a triple.
Yeah, the game's rigged.
There's a lot of rigged. There's a lot of, you know, oh, they were just born that way.
What's the point?
You think about all the touched by God. That guy's gifted. He's touched by God. Like, okay, well, how are you going to compete with touched by God, right? You know? And it gives everyone an out to – if somebody said the only difference between that person and you is that person has a stronger constitution, that person has a better work ethic, and that person has more character, that would make you feel horrible. But if instead you said that person was lucky, touched by God, born on third base or with a silver spoon in their mouth, then it takes all the onus off you. So we've constructed this elaborate – scaffolding of excuses that enable us to keep eating and sitting.
Well, so Kobe, no one could argue with the talent, right? His father played professional basketball. He's 6'6", incredible gifts, but he always said that he wanted to be known as an overachiever.
Right. Right.
And so even with all those gifts, like the truly great people at anything, right, are some combination of talent and hard work in any walk of life. And so he was definitely that. LeBron is definitely that. You know, like look at LeBron James came into the NBA a grown man at 18 and right. people were bouncing off him. And yet he got better every year and he got a little stronger and he got a little tougher. So that was it. And the other thing, as you were talking about that, Adam, made me think about from being and listening to Taurasi and Sabrina Ionescu, Kobe's attitude enabled a lot of young girls and women to feel that same way. And then Gigi was now taking that mantle to try to get to the next level. So now for her, she had Diana Taurasi to look right. up to, whereas Taurasi looked up to Kobe. And
right.
so that paradigm shift seems to me like that's really powerful. And you think about how where the WNBA could get in 50 years, because it's still super new. Like,
right.
like the English Premier League has been around for over 100 years. You know, like, so now, even like people talk about Major League Soccer, I'm going on a tangent here, but soccer here is still new enough where there's a lot of ground to be gained, and the WNBA started in the 90s. So, like, I do think it could get to a higher level there.
When did the NBA start? In the 40s, 50s?
The late 40s and 50s, and then the merger happened with the NBA like later than that. But there was the league before the NBA. I can't remember what it was called. But the NBA was right around that time.
Yeah. Very sad. Very, I don't know, hope everyone sort of takes stock of themselves and their family and their life. And also, if you miss Kobe or you were inspired by Kobe, then, you know, take a few pages out of his playbook and get to work, everybody. So that's just what that guy did. I mean, you know, he's not here because while we were all sleeping Sunday morning, he was up right. going to a basketball yeah. game with his daughter. I mean, that's honestly what the reason yeah. he's not here is because Sunday was a work day for him or a day to improve or help somebody around him get better. All right, Mike, hang out. We'll take a break and then we'll come back and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Well, fresh off the heels of this memorial, something that made headlines this morning, Vanessa Bryant has filed a wrongful death lawsuit following the deaths of her husband, Kobe, her daughter, 13-year-old Gianna. This is according to the LA Times. Bryant has brought a suit against Island Express Helicopters and Island Express Holding Corp, seeking general damages, economic damages, punitive damages. The helicopter pilot, I believe it was Zovian, he was previously disciplined in 2015 for violating federal flight rules and received counseling, as per the LA Times. He was also flying for Island at that time as well. And during the fatal crash in January, thick fog, as we know, the LAPD, they ground all of their helicopters that day. A preliminary investigation showed there was no engine failure on the helicopter's part. So that would actually be an interesting question for Garagos. How does this work?
Is it on behalf of the other clients or what? The clients, passengers? Or
all, everybody.
Is she spearheading it for everybody?
I don't know.
Because I thought it was just for her family.
I think, everyone's going to lawyer up. Everyone's sure. going to sue.
Individually.
You can't
maybe.
Have a company yeah. like this without buku insurance yeah. with super deep pockets, and they're just going to go after the money, and everyone's going to be compensated, and everyone will be minus their loved ones, right. but set for life financially. So the guys who were, you know, we're not so worried about the Bryant estate, but the guys who are right. baseball yeah. coaches and
other
regular
there.
Civilian yeah. types will be set up. For life.
Brian, it reminded me of, what was the laundromat?
Yeah.
Meryl Streep.
Right. They denied the insurance.
Yeah,
on her
it got
husband.
Me thinking yeah, about yeah, all yeah. that. I certainly hope that doesn't happen, and I expect that.
Hopefully
well.
It'll end quickly.
Where'd yeah. you see Meryl Streep?
In a laundromat.
I was going to say. Weird? Coin op?
Yeah, coin op.
Love and fall?
Yeah, her help was off, and my washer was broken. Yeah.
It was the Bel Air Canyon fluff and fold.
Yeah. yeah. That one's
off,
nicer.
Off I of Beverly Glen.
That one's air conditioned.
I missed the smell of that place. I used to go to coin op
the dryer sheets. sheets.
All just it was the Tide in the mini boxes or something.
It's a little soapy.
It was coming in. It had a smell and had a kind of warm air bursting about.
They had a video game sometimes. Like, yeah. There was like a Pac-Man in one that I used to go to.
Oh, God.
May or not, may yeah. or may not be out of
fancy
service.
Ones in Minnesota.
No, no, this was in Marina Del Rey. Like when I first moved out here,
Miss the probably the most comfortable seating minus any padding at all. Like the fiberglass is just scoops. Shaped
with the divot. Scoopty.
I just slide on into that.
The one in Hollywood has like one of those claw games, but you pull out boxes of detergent.
Wow.
It's pretty good.
For the children. Is that sad?
Yeah, it was a simpler time, but I also realized, like, I used to just bring a stack of papers and some stuff, and I'd, like, get caught up on writing out checks and
Settled
bills,
office.
And I'd write bits, I'd, like, write comedy bits and stuff. It's like this self-imposed creative environment that smelled like Tide. Like, I mean, like, I'd have to go down there for, like, 3 hours, and I'd just bring a whole bunch of stuff. The stuff you never want to do as long as SportsCenter was on your TV set at home.
Interior. Soap factory. Nice. Right. The smell of suds wafts through the air.
That's right. Mysterious blonde entered. She's got grass stains.
See, but then they invented the iPhone, and, like, you can't be bored anywhere now.
No.
I don't care about running errands. I've got my AirPods or whatever. I'll just listen to a podcast. Like, it's fine. I'll go. I'll sit in line.
I'll tell you the thing that it has. The smartphone and the ubiquitous smartphone has not ruined me, but it's hurt me a little bit in the I don't care nearly as much if I'm 8 minutes late somewhere, because if I walk in, the person's always just sitting at the table and they look
catching
like
up.
They're in the middle of something.
Futzing
like,
around.
They're taking care of business sometimes, answering texts or getting comments. It's like, that guy's just working on. I still don't do it, but I have a different mindset on it, because in the past, there'd be the guy, I'd be playing napkin football with himself. Like, he'd ball up a foot, be standing there. He'd do that move with the straw where he bunched up the paper on it and made it unravel. Like, the guy's just sitting there bored off his ass staring at the ceiling.
You're 100% right, because I'm thinking of the times that I've been waiting for someone to text me. I'm 5 minutes out, 5 minutes late. It's like, thank God.
Yeah.
I appreciate the 5 minutes. I guess
I can caught up on something.
Yeah. So we talked about this the other day, about how one of Steven Spielberg's daughters is doing porn, and how she says the family's so supportive and that they're fine with it.
Jews love it when their daughters do porn. That
you're telling me.
I know.
Yeah.
That I know.
Well, it turns out Steven Spielberg might not be as cool with it as his daughter wanted us to believe.
Mm. Here's the problem with the cinematic aspect of it.
it's only a one-camera shot. When Michaela Spielberg revealed last week that she was embarking on this X-rated film career, she told Britain's Sun magazine that the E.T. director and mother Kate Capshaw are not upset. They're even intrigued. And she's 23. She might not have told the whole story. According to a friend of the family.
Intrigued. They said, what the fuck are you thinking? Like, oh, they're intrigued.
Yeah, I'm intrigued as to how you don't think you're going to be cut off. They said they've always been supportive of Michaela and try to understand her, but there are limits, and they're embarrassed by her sudden public admission into this world of sex working. The insider adds, quote, nothing can hurt Steven Spielberg's immaculate reputation, nor Kate's, but they're worried about how Michaela's revelation looks to the other kids who are trying to be supportive, but they're embarrassed too. They certainly, this is not how they were raised.
Nothing can hurt his reputation? Let's talk to Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby and say, there's some things that hurt your reputation.
Not as it stands now.
Right, but let's not pretend that he can't be toppled.
That's true.
Her revenue is all based on streaming or clicks or whatever, right?
Yeah, they begged her to take her Instagram down.
So doesn't this kind of news get her a lot more clicks?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah, of
course.
Wants
that. Yeah, this is great.
This is great.
I mean, otherwise, she, minus this, it's just a sort of average-looking gal up there flicking her bick. I don't know what they did.
She does do solo work, yeah.
I file this under snake meat. Like, oh, you ever had rattlesnakes? Like, I'm good. Why, are we out of steak? Like, it's not my thing. I
but
get it.
Don't you think this is going to give her another wave of a boost, knowing that daddy hates it?
Yeah, I guess there's going to be a lot of curiosity seekers, right?
Sure.
Had you heard of Michaela Spielberg before this?
No. But, I don't know. Who's in it? Max Patty, you're the right age. You into these girls?
The cam girls?
The cam girls?
No.
What is it? Who's in the cam girls? And then what's the allure?
Let me ask the other guys and see if there's
anybody
who knows.
Okay. It's a great documentary. I'm going to look up the name of it because I saw it and it's fantastic.
It's okay. Not a documentary, Brian. It's just a camera.
Call your computer.
Hot Girls Wanted. I'm going to see if that's on stream.
Oh, yeah. That's on Netflix, I think. I think it was. Anyway, so.
Oh, I saw some of that. It became wildly depressing, right?
Extremely depressing.
Yeah, yes,
it is streaming on Netflix.
I don't 100%
right.
It.
Yeah. And it should be called Marginally Attractive Girls Wanted.
Well, they have like after porn, but all it makes me do is go to my computer and look for during porn.
Look for the heyday?
No, just during.
Oh, okay.
Just that's right now.
Oh, sure.
Guys, watch Hot Girls Wanted. Watch Hot Girls Wanted because the guy there who does like the recruiting and the management and all that shit, he is a fucking great character. He's a horrible person.
He's a putz.
He's a horrible person. He's a great character. He's an amazing
Better
flank.
Than the Bikram yoga guy?
Oh, it's a different end of the spectrum, man.
Yeah, this guy's like...
One's a multimillionaire.
Dopey, yeah.
He's a schmuck, for sure, but he's great.
Yeah, please don't watch it. Or at least go in with your eyes open. So while we wait for Chris to take a poll of the staff here. So another details come out about this Friends reunion special. We talked about that recently. HBO confirmed it on Friday. It is happening. Network's president released a statement saying the original cast, entire cast, is going to be involved. Total price tag, according to The Wrap, at least $20 million.
Did you say what network?
HBO.
HBO.
Right. And here's what we didn't know before. Apparently, because we knew it was going to be unscripted, it's not going to be like a sitcom, but apparently Ellen will be hosting it, like kind of a talk show format.
What a lazy payday.
This is going to be a panel?
That's
a goddamn panel?
Yeah, yep. Remember the episode where Ross got the monkey? Oh. Yeah.
That is exactly what it's supposed to be because they're showing clips. They're talking about clips.
Jesus
for
Christ.
$20 million.
I don't have a strong take on Friends as I've never seen an episode, but this reminds me of the episode of Inside the Actor's Studio when they had the cast of The Simpsons on, and they weren't funny at all. Because they're not scripted. Like, Hank Azaria was kind of funny, and Harry Shearer had some good ones, but it was painfully unfunny because everyone's there to see The Simpsons, we all know and love, is one of the best written shows of all time.
Right.
No one's writing. They're just asking them questions. Like, can we hear from Homer Simpson? He's like, just does Homer. Like, oh, that wasn't funny.
I'm kind of over it. Friends is a funny show, but I'm over it. We don't need to keep going with this. Kaylin, you're into the webcam girls?
From time to time.
How does it work?
Noon to midnight?
How does it work?
To be honest, I've never done like the kind of live watching or the paying for it. It's kind of the more pre-recorded
Captain Kaylin.
And then put up on Pornhub or wherever.
And
Big Bean,
is it that they can interact with them, like give them suggestions, stuff to do, or how's it work?
I mean, yes, when you do stream them live, I think you can pay for them to do certain things, and
I think
they
but
those are the kind that I've watched.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, here's $10. Can you please show me whatever?
They're always alone, right?
Sometimes I think they're with friends.
Friends.
But are they
friends? Associates.
Co-workers.
Yeah, your job's a joke, you're broke, your schism's DOA. But never with the fellas, right?
No.
They have to, like, their friends come in, the girls.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Hmm.
All right. It's a whole world out there sexually. And it's weird to me. You know,
Mike, what do you know?
Yeah, well, you've been awful quiet.
Well, no, I was just thinking about, I was trying to think of what else I did before the iPhone. I was thinking of the calculator snake game, like you could play.
The graphing calculator.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
that was a big,
that, I don't know why that was what I was thinking of when you guys were talking about the cam stuff. I'm not really familiar with that.
Yeah. Okay.
What goes on the team plan? Any cam stuff?
I can't say that I can speak on that, Brian, but I appreciate the question.
But you're on the flights, right?
Yeah.
Write it down and I'll read it for you.
What's the meals on the flights?
Oh, they're very good.
Oh, shocking.
Yeah.
How does that work? How does that work? Do people put in before they leave, or they just go, we got steak or chicken tonight?
So there's like, there are certain catering services, right, that various teams in the NBA use. They've gone back and forth between just using restaurants and then having a caterer that provides like a larger menu. Mm-hmm. But usually, I mean, it's all catered towards the players, right? Because they need to recover, and then the rest of us in the back just get the benefits of this.
Right.
So there's usually a steak, a chicken, and a fish, and then there are sides. There's always always a vegetable, right? There's always some kind of like starch or potato or something like that. Yeah, and then you just can pick whatever you want, basically.
What's the booze policy on the flight?
There is no booze. There's nothing on the plane. I understand that it's different in certain sports. Like, I think that they do have booze
hockey,
in baseball.
They have to.
In hockey, it's not even a question, right? They probably have kegs in the NHL.
It's in the IVs.
Right. Yeah, right. That's part of the deal.
So no booze on the flight.
Adam's out.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And then...
lots of kombucha, though.
What's
that? You like kombucha?
You don't.
No.
Oh, okay.
What is... and then what is... How does the plane configured? It's a chartered plane. There's a first class. The players and the coaches are in the first class.
So it's a little different per team also. So some teams have their own plane. Like Mark Cuban has a plane, right? That he flies the Mavs around on. The Lakers charter through Delta. Mm-hmm. So there's the big sort of
really.
Yeah, Delta's a lot of teams are on Delta, but it's like a specific plane. So like even the seats in the back are basically first class seats.
Right.
But the players are in the front. The kind of the training staff and strength staff is in the middle, and the second part of the middle are the coaches. Mm-hmm. And then in the back, it's kind of like the broadcasters, the public relations crew, the broadcast crew, radio, stuff like that.
How many all in are on the plane?
I want to say it's probably like 50-ish.
About 50 in a 60? Plane that would hold 150 or something like that if it was configured like a Southwest?
I would think so, yeah. Like if they had the seats really lined up. Because some of them, they have the tables in between, right? So like the coaches can face each other, and they've got the laptops up and they're watching game film. And yeah.
But unlike overnight, like the flight home from Philly or New York or whatever, you know, at 10 p.m. or whatever it is, these dudes, these 7-foot dudes are just... trying to catch the Z's in like first class seats?
It depends. I mean, some guys sleep, some guys play cards, some guys watch movies.
Some guys try to sneak on a little booze or reefer or something.
Edibles?
You know, there's got to be a little of that.
So there is a security check. So I don't think drugs are too common. I wouldn't be surprised if there is like the occasional beer here or there. But but it's not. It's nothing. I mean, typically like on a typical game, it's 7:30 p.m. right on the East Coast. By the time you're in the air, it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really just, it's not like a party scene necessarily. Usually guys are either sleeping or watching something or just getting something done. It's not as you might think.
All right.
Who drinks the most on the roster?
Hmm.
You have to answer that.
You know what, Brian? I'm going to think about that.
We'll circle back after the news.
Yeah. It's a fair question, though.
The only other rumor, just to wrap up this Friends situation, is David Schwimmer said, we're not rebooting. It's just this thing. The rumor is that the actors are still in negotiation for a 12-part reunion series next year, but only if HBO can afford it. So we'll see.
Thank God. You got to be happy when the Jennifer Anistons of the world love paydays and love working, you know?
Yeah, because our game.
Yeah, like if you're in a band and you're Guns N' Roses and Axl's a little nutty and has F me money and wants to just chillax in Malibu for 7 years and you're like the drummer and you like want to go out, you know, make some hay while the sun shines. If you get that band member that just is rich from the solo work and doesn't need your money and doesn't like you and doesn't whatever.
Songs,
right, then they're just done. But, you know, Aniston is such a big component of it, who's out there having this fruitful career minus Friends, is always game to go back and jump into that.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch the 90210 remake thing?
Oh, I saw every commercial for it and never saw it.
I was scared to watch it because I enjoyed 90210 in high school. I did.
Yeah, I did too.
Melrose
I loved all
Place
that
was
stuff.
On afterwards, so I was in it. So I was like, I didn't want to spoil it. But then at the same time, I'm definitely watching Top Gun Maverick when that comes out.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
So like, what's the difference? I mean, I'm not really worried for my Top Gun nostalgia. Maybe because the trailer looks so awesome. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Ian Ziering didn't turn into quite the star that Tom Cruise did, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Give it time.
But I used to love watching all the Melrose Places and all that
awesome
stuff. It was just schlocky nothing, but I enjoyed it as an adult. I'm older than you, man.
Nighttime soap opera.
Yeah.
They were good. Those were good shows.
Heather Locklear joins the cast.
If I had to put money on it, I would say the HBO 12-part reunion series would happen, and the reason I'm thinking about this is because I was talking to Phil Rosenthal, who had a show on Netflix. He says, do you know what the most popular thing on Netflix is? I'm like, what is it? Friends reruns.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And The Office.
It's like if HBO wants to take a little bit of business away from Netflix, Friends reunion, whatever price they pay is gonna be worth it.
Well, I don't know what HBO's up to exactly these days, but a few years ago, I mean, the only game in town was HBO. If you had a stand-up special or you did whatever, now it's Netflix and beyond. HBO feels like, I'm assuming they feel like, we got to make a move, and we got to make a big move now, because we're sort of losing market share as every day that goes by.
I was confused by the HBO Max thing. Like, I already pay to subscribe to HBO, right? So I have all of their shows available. So what, like, what is beyond that? What is Max of, like, what seems like the full catalog?
I couldn't even tell.
You just strap in and wait to find out.
I guess Friends Plus.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Disney Plus.
Adam,
yeah.
Does the name Mike Hughes, Mad Mike Hughes, sound familiar?
Oh, was he a stuntman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just going to preface this story by saying there is video of it. I don't know if you want to watch it. But over the weekend, Mad Mike Hughes was killed after the botched launch of his homemade rocket. So video of the crash, and don't put it up, posted on Twitter, shows the homemade rocket as it takes off from the launch pad mounted on this white truck. And it is in the distance.
It was a steam rocket, I think. What was Evel Knievel's? Evel Knievel, I think, was Evel. Evel's was a steam.
Was he a stuntman, or was he like a homemade scientist?
Yeah, like a... Yeah, like
he was quasi scientist, right?
Yeah, this Evel was for the Science Channel. Okay. Yeah. So at the launch, the rocket veered to one side, and a parachute could be seen floating down while the rocket crashed into the desert in Barstow, California. The event on Saturday was supposed to be featured on Homemade Astronauts, which is a new series for the Science Channel. And this was from the New York Post, I believe. It says Hughes believed the Earth was flat. Part of his goal was to fly into space to see for himself, and maybe that was just sort of part of the fun of it. I don't know.
There was a steam cycle, the Sky Cycle, as it was called, that Evel flew, and he thought he was going to get to like 60,000 feet.
It
seems
down.
Insane. So the thing that's so eerie about the footage, and it's so reminiscent of the Evel Knievel Snake River launch, is. When Evel was launched, the parachute deployed as he was being launched.
Right.
And in this case, Mike, he got launched, parachute deployed, and tore off.
Yeah, he went
so
fast.
Now you're just going into the air minus the chute. Yeah. Now the good news is he probably didn't know the chute was missing until he hit his sort of apex, started to come down, and then start to deploy the chute. So it wasn't probably on the way up. He probably wasn't aware that the chute had deployed. I think I may go this way. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, because...
That's what I've got on my bingo card.
There's really only been one instance of a guy doing a steam-powered rocket launch, and that's Evel Knievel. And the thing that really went wrong is the chute deployed prematurely, like on the way, on the launching pad. I don't know, Max, you could probably look at both Evel and his. I think in the Evel one, there's some controversy because it's like, oh, the G's made Evel go back and like pull the lever. You know, his hand was on the yoke and the chute deploy was above that. And he probably pulled back on it or something. And then, of course, Evel's like wasn't pilot error. It was mechanical error. And the guy built the thing didn't like that part of it. Maybe we'll never know. But if I was embarking on this endeavor.
Do you have a target date?
I'd be like, look, there's one thing that can't happen. There's just one thing that can't happen. I cannot have the parachute deploy on the way up, in which case all the steam, all that's coming out of the back of the rocket just blows up the parachute, and then I'm up 10,000 feet in the air with no parachute. Now, we need a second parachute on
that's
the nose,
thinking, yeah.
or we need this one, or whatever. But the one thing that can't happen is what happened to Evel Knievel. And when you see them both, or as I see them both sort of in my mind's eye, they both just did the same thing. They just Evel fired his thing, Snake River thing, and the chute was dragging behind him he was going up the thing. Yeah. Like the chute was out. He's so lucky the thing didn't just blow off, but it literally deployed as he went out. And what's this
Mike Hughes.
Mike Hughes, exact same thing. A chute deployed on the way up. Evel was lucky in that his chute didn't blow off. Mike was unlucky in that his chute did blow off.
Wow.
But that would be like, I don't know. I just feel like this is the one thing that can't happen.
Yes,
it cannot happen.
Yep. Have you guys ever been skydiving, any of you?
No.
I haven't either. I'm deathly afraid of it. But it's like, why am I trusting that 100% this whoever I'm strapped to, assuming you go like whatever it is, a tandem. How do I know 100% that you're going to pull the shoot at the right time? No, it's not worth it to me.
Yeah,
I want that.
People say it's liberating or it's whatever, and I don't begrudge anybody. On the other hand, it's a very weird non-human thing to do. All your wiring is to stay in the plane. The good news is, as I've seen, and I've been to a couple like parachute academies and stuff, the plane is always much scarier than the sky. Like that old
Tin
drunk
can.
Guy, right?
Want to get out
with a fixed wing, above wing, and a gusset that looks bent on the side, like with the permanent in place landing gear. Like that thing. When you jump out of that thing, you may be doing yourself a favor, like statistically.
That's a fair point.
Mm-hmm. I jumped off the Stratosphere in Vegas. That was terrifying.
You bungeed?
No, I just jumped. No, you're kind of secured and you hit a bullseye. But I was up there and I was at the very end of the plank. And I know you guys are going to be shocked, but I started crying. I was like, I can't do this. And they were finally like, well, you got to shit or get off the pot here because we got a line. I was like,
yeah.
Okay.
Which is a metaphor. Don't shit out there in the plank.
I didn't realize that at the time. So what I ended up doing, for some reason, at that moment, I realized if I was going to do this, I had to do it backwards. I couldn't look out into the abyss and step off that plank. So I just nudged myself to the back and just fell out. And it was awesome.
So you're glad you did it?
Yeah. It was funny because there's video of it because they do that, you know, as you go down. And how my face goes from absolute terror to absolute joy. And you see the progression in that like 3.5 seconds. It was pretty cool.
I'm glad that people aren't bungee jumping as much.
That's kind
of
over.
I'm tired of that guy hitting his head on the rock in the stream because they didn't calculate it. Like I'm tired of watching people jump off and stuff. Do you have Mike's rocket there?
Yeah,
somebody tweeted me.
I don't know if you want to see it.
I've never seen this.
It's kind of off in the distance, but it looks the same as sort of Evil's thing. His is a truck mounted thing, and he just fires out, and you'll see the deploy what appeared to be the same shoots out. And it's bad, but look, if that's not exactly what happened to Evil, I don't know what is. I just say there's just one thing that can't happen. Or we need a second shoot somewhere.
That's the crazy part to me. There wasn't a second one?
All right, let me hit Mercari. If you have stuff and it's cluttering the house, you got the kid's old baseball glove doesn't fit anymore, or the dress you've only worn once, the old phone in the drawer, let's get rid of it. Let's not put it in a landfill. Let's go with Mercari. It's a selling app that makes it fast and easy to sell almost anything. Simply take a few pics, add a description of your item listed. Mercari will even email you a shipping label when it sells. 500,000 plus happy reviews on the App Store. They average 4.8 star ratings, so that's got to be good. Don't let that stuff go to waste. Sell it, ship it, and get paid with Mercari. Find Mercari at the App Store and or Mercari.com. That's Mercari, Mercari, the selling app, man. Let's get paid for some of that clutter. All right, Gina, what else?
Well, this is a perfect time for Mercari if you're going to prom or getting married, because coronavirus apparently is impacting this year's prom and wedding season. 4 out of 5 bridal gowns and prom dresses are manufactured in China, and due to coronavirus quarantines, several of these factories are shut down. A shortage looms in dresses for weddings, proms, all these spring and summer events. But, of course, David's Bridal to the rescue, or at least that's what they say. They say they can guarantee they have 300,000 gowns in storage. They'll fulfill all the orders because everyone is freaking out. There's almost no manufacturing of these fancy frocks.
Or you can go full Pretty in Pink, where you just take a curtain and get the sewing. You know,
Annie Potts' old prom dress.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the best.
My wife's got her wedding dress, and it's just been sitting in the garage in a big bag.
God willing, she's not going to need it again.
Maybe I could use this. Could you send me that article? Then I could send it to her and be like, look, hey, I think we can make a little money.
Ooh, wedding dress donation.
You know?
Yeah.
See, I thought about your donation would have been the nicer thought, Brian, but I
instead you thought
I
was selling
thinking,
it.
Yeah. I was thinking about
money
getting
man.
Money. Yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest lie in America is when wedding dress is $3,000, and then you go, $3,000, you wear it once, and then they go, our daughter's going to wear this. And it's like,
no.
No.
Well, hold on. Let me do some quick math. Where's your mom's dress? Because she pitched that shit to your dad 41 years ago, and I don't see that dress anywhere.
It's messed up because the diamond thing, that's one thing. Like, that's more money than probably, you know, most of us when we get married feel like we can spend. But then that at least does retain value. Mm. You know, this it does, doesn't
I,
it? Does it?
I don't know.
I think it's one of those when you drive it off the lot to prove
But I mean, well, so I, for example, I did give my... I got
but they wear it every day.
I see the commercials, and they go, guaranteed to appraise for five times as much.
Everybody's
as,
waving.
But I'm saying compared to a wedding dress, though.
Yeah, right.
Where
right.
it
yeah.
literally is going to stick. At least you have it on, and it's still a diamond.
Right.
Oh,
it's
the
still
worst,
got some value.
The worst is, I think... Some of them have to go into like storage, and then you have to like pay for the storage.
Like the
part.
Humidor.
Yeah, because they have to be temperature, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. It's all just some weird ritual that it's essentially that whole world is like, I'm angry at money. Like, that's what it feels like to me. Like, the floral arrangements are only $4,600. Like, they'll be dead the next day. Like,
I'm angry at money. I want it out of this
racket.
House.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's so it's the dress, racket. Like, everything about it is a. Let's see how much we can spend on nothing in one day. Now, look, I get food, get some good catering
sure.
going.
And the band?
The
and
photographer.
I get the band, I get the photographer. But, like, the dress, I don't know. Can we tell the difference between 300 and 3,000 and the floral stuff, I guess? Maybe in the diamond, what are we going to do with that?
Yeah.
My whole thing is, if you guys are living comfortably in Palos Verdes, fine. If you're living in an apartment in Sherman Oaks, that money should be going toward the down of a condo.
Yeah, take out loans, yeah.
That's exactly what I said to Andy. What I still tell him, because, you know, we talk about wedding stuff and we're talking about engagement rings. I'm wearing my grandmother's wedding band, not her engagement ring. But I say, just remember, I appreciate you wanting to do it up for my sake, and that's all very nice and generous. But I consider any money being put toward this wedding is money... You are stealing from our down payment for a house.
That's marriage material. Oh, wait, okay,
you know, okay, and but, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was like, I don't want to rob us of our future for a party.
Of course. It's
very sensible.
Over,
of you.
Thank
over
you.
One night. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
very
yeah.
sensible.
Mm-hmm. Well, being 26, I've seen a thing or two. So you should,
I mean, what?
You shouldn't believe everything you see on the internet. This story is now finally gaining some traction. I saw the YouTube video last week. Popular YouTuber proved that once again, you can make anything look true, according to CNN. Natalia Taylor. She posted a series of photos on her Instagram. We have some that made it look like she had this far off travel adventure, exotic in Bali. She's in this tub, full makeup. She has other, you know, scenarios. She's in, you know, like this bamboo room. And she told everyone she's on this big, amazing. Now, leave it on this picture. Thank you. This big, amazing, exotic trip to Bali. Everybody bought it. Everybody thought she looked amazing. Everybody wanted to go to Bali after this. Look in the mirror. Do you see anything? Any Easter eggs there that might tip off that she's not really in a hotel? And it will be very hard to see, probably, if you don't know what you're looking for.
I see. Looks like a guy taking a picture.
Do you see that white strip?
Yeah, see the white strip?
That's an IKEA receipt. That's a tag hanging off a couch in IKEA.
Oh, she's in IKEA.
So she wanted to do this to kind of teach everyone a lesson. She hid these little tag Easter eggs and told her photographer, leave them in. Mm. She fooled everyone, and the whole point wasn't to make her audience feel dumb or to make any money. She said, I'm trying to prove a point. The perfect place to fake an influencer vacation and to lie to all my followers was not the point. I want people to know we could all use a fun reminder to take social media less seriously and don't believe everything you see.
Is there anything? I've been to IKEA a time or two. Nothing wafts better than Swedish meatballs.
That's for damn sure.
Pizza's pretty good wafting.
McDonald's fries.
Fries are pretty good, but the Swedish meatball, the waft, man, they put it by the front door, man.
They
you
blow
come
it
up
in.
That escalator, you're like, I need me some Swedish meatballs.
One counterexample. What about like a Cinnabon?
Oh, yeah, that's good waft. Then.
That's a strong
waft. That's a good waft.
That's good waft. Strong that's waft. Airport waft.
You can go. You can be in like 200 yards away in a mall to a Cinnabon, and it'll start getting it to you. Like Wetzel pretzel, a little bit or whatever pretzel.
Yeah,
the scent makes it float on the.
But the cinnamon,
hitter,
yeah, right. yeah, yeah, that's one, yeah.
I agree. Good waft.
Thank you.
But I would argue that savory waft brings it out in you more, like the rib joint. The meat,
barbecue.
The meat, the savory waft.
I just have a sweet tooth, though. Mm. So maybe that's me. I prefer dessert to almost anything.
I like the sweet waft, but the savory makes me drool, like the barbecue. Like the
actual
beef,
actual
the
drool?
Meat, the meat. You know, you start to salivate. Like, I can feel myself like salivating.
Is that like the inverse of meat sweats?
Yeah, yeah.
It's before the meat sweat.
Yeah, it's before the meat. It's pre-meat sweat.
Interesting.
It's the salivating. And I do. Like, I'll see my dog. I'll see Phil. Like, I'll be in the kitchen, like, eating a steak or something. And I'll look at Phil, and he's just drooling. He's drooling.
It's wired in us.
It's wired in us.
Arizona Diamondbacks left-hander Madison Bumgarner is one of the greatest postseason pitchers, according to this article, of
God
all time.
Goddamn right he is.
But baseball isn't the only thing he's been competing in. Fan. Do you know this, Brian?
He's a bowler. Is there just something else?
He's 30. He told The Athletic that he had been using an alias, Mason Saunders, to take part in rodeo events. Explaining to the sports news website, he's been competing under the alias to not attract attention. In early December, he won $26,000 in a team roping rodeo competition in Wickenburg, Arizona.
He's like a real hick.
Yeah.
He's like
and in an interview with MLB in 2016, Bumgarner, who grew up in rural North Carolina, said he learned roping from his future father-in-law when he was like 15 or 16 years old. He also said at the time that rodeo could become more than just a hobby once he retires from baseball.
I hope the roping they use the young calves, right?
Maybe.
Typically, yeah.
Yeah, they have the young calves. Yeah. That's what they rope. And then they rope them from the horse, and then they jump off the horse, and then they hog time, essentially, and then they do like a time thing when they're done. I think they should only use the calves set aside for veal, because I feel like that would make them extra miserable. Like, you're sitting in this little cage drinking milk the whole time, getting ready for slaughter, and at some point someone goes, oh, no, go ahead.
No, by all means.
Yeah, no, you can leave.
Explore the space.
Yeah, you're like, what's the name from Catch a Predator? You know what I mean? Like,
you're free to go.
Chris
you're
Hansen.
Free to leave.
You're free to go.
All right, well, I made a big mistake, and I'm not going to go on the internet anymore. You're free to leave. Okay, I'm sorry.
Are you the police? No, we are not.
Yeah.
You can walk away right now.
Tell Brittany I'll see you in about 11 years. But all right, so I'm just leaving. You're free to go.
Free to go.
And the guy goes, okay, like bullet dodge, and then the Fresno Popo.
Jump
they
on.
Always tackle him on the lawn, yep. And it's always great because they yell, get down, get down. And as the guy's going down, they'll jump on top of him. It's like,
dog pile.
I was complying. Yeah. I was lying on my belly. But I feel like they do that. Like Chris Hansen should say to the veal, like, you're free to leave.
Right now? I mean,
go ahead.
The door's never open.
And they just start walking out, and then Bumgarner comes up on a horse. It's like you're running, and next thing you know, he jumps on you and is tagging you.
The first thing I ever heard about Bumgarner, aside from baseball, do you remember the Vin Scully thing with the snake? So Vin Scully, who, you know, the famous, could read a phone book, and it sounds amazing, he told a story on the air in a Dodgers-Giants game about how Bumgarner saved a rabbit by killing a snake with his bare hands. Like, this is just something that he does.
Chuck Norris.
He's just this kind of dude. Like, that's the kind of stuff that gets him going.
Yeah.
That's good.
Wild man.
Well, then they posed the question that I was wondering, is he allowed to do this? I mean, does his contract say he can possibly break his back doing rodeo stunts?
Well, he's not bull riding, but if you got to jump off, you got to jump off that horse. You got to rope it and jump off, like, while it's still kind of moving.
That's a very fair question, though, because there aren't that many athletes that would, like, there isn't a lot of precedent. Probably for this specific sport. Mm-hmm. Like, I know basketball guys have gotten in trouble for snowboarding.
Riding motorcycles.
Or going to Rucker Park.
Yeah, like Vladimir Radmanovich famously was snowboarding and didn't tell the Lakers about it. And like it got hurt, right? And it was an issue. So this would be one of those things that would probably qualify, wouldn't
it? The Bumgarner rule.
I think this happened to a former Giant, Jeff Kent. Didn't he have some sort of issue and he's claimed like he fell off his truck, washing his truck or something?
That sounds right.
But he was doing some crazy shit he should have been doing to avoid his contract.
That sounds right.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more.
All right. 62-year-old retired Marine and DEA Supervisory Special Agent George Hood broke the world record for planking last week, holding the abdominal pose for a total of 8 hours, 15 minutes, and 15 seconds, according to Fox News. Hood was a previous record holder, but he had it snatched away by Mao Weidong from China. He beat him in 2016 at the Plank World Cup in Shangri-La Hotel in Beijing. Hood said he prepared
for
this.
Not a spectator sport. Watching middle-aged guys not move for 9 hours.
No. Plank, 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 plank.
Do you know what he did to prepare
for
this?
That slap contest. That's the sport. That's the bungalow you want to be in, not the planking competition.
Great Absol.
He said he did 674,000 sit-ups, 270,000 push-ups, and practiced for when to to do this, and he did it for 10 hours and 10 minutes.
I don't know how tall he is. He doesn't look that tall. The Chinese guy worries me a little. There's got to be height divisions.
Because
if you're 5'4", if you're like 5'4", that's an easier plank.
It's like the bench press. It's easier to bench press
if you're
shorter.
Yeah, if you're long-armed and you're 6'4", planking's tougher,
I think, at that handicap.
Height. Yeah.
So after his record was confirmed, he celebrated by doing 75 push-ups and then announced his retirement.
You know, somewhere he has a daughter with an eating disorder, right?
Yeah, she's
gotta
never good enough.
Stepson that hates him. It's like transitioning stepson with daughter and eating disorder. Hey, everybody! Her dad's planking somewhere, but if you want to go to this plank bank, then you see Shelly stage 7, Jade stage 4, stage 4. And by the way, stepson's transitioning, so he's going to be out here in about 11 days, I think. I don't know. I'm still going to be here. I'm setting my own record over here. All right, that's enough. I'm going to back it.
Yeah,
planking.
He's pursuing his own kind of excellence, Adam, like we started earlier in the show with. Mm.
I know. That's all great mind work, because planking is just, that's all your brain, right?
Pretty boring.
But I still say, if you're under 6 foot, I don't know. There's got to be different divisions.
Different divisions, height divisions.
I'm trying to find out how tall the Chinese guy took the record. If that guy's 5'5" that doesn't count.
Mao Weidong
says here you're 5'11", sir, and you're a lanky plank.
Yeah, lanky plank.
That's right.
No.
The tail of the tape. I have my thumb right here. It's 5'11", just a shade over. Actually, congratulations.
I remember when I was young, I'd go to Disneyland, and they had, like, Goofy's arm hanging out. This is a weird version of that.
You've obviously grown quite a bit.
Thank you. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Let me bust a nut, my lady. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, we got Geico. You own, you rent. Well, you probably do one or the other. You need some insurance. How about you bundle those policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too. Save tons of money and save tons of time. Just go to geico.com, get a quote. See just how much you could be saving at Geico. Visit geico.com. Do it today. They make it so easy to bundle. Cleveland Hilarities coming up Thursday, and then Indianapolis, two shows Friday and Saturday, and two shows at Cleveland, too. That'll be at Helium. Go to amcarolla.com for all the stuff you need. And Mike Trudell, everybody, the official Lakers podcast. Yes, Gina, are you making a move?
I was clapping for Mike.
Sorry, on the corner of my
eye.
New episodes every Monday on the Apple, Spotify, and Podcast One as well. Lakers.com is where we can find you on the website. Where else would you like?
That's all well and good right there. Shout out to Aaron Larsoul, my partner, too, on the official Lakers podcast.
And you can shoot him a tweet at Lakers Reporter as well. And Mark Garagos, you don't need to know where he is. So until next time, I'm Carl from Mark Garagos, Mike Trudell, and Gina Grad, and Paul Bryan. Say mahalo.
Just a minute, I'm about to come.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Subscribe to Take an E for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at adamcarolla.com and get your tickets and info on everything. Like Adam Carolla is unprepared all winter long. Go to adamcarolla.com.